Sherry over, we moved outside and installed ourselves in Siegfried's Rover, on which an immaculate coach-building job had been done since the disaster of last summer. It was an impressive turnout. The car, after a morning's forced labour by Tristan with hose and leather, shone like a mirror. Siegfried, in the driver's seat, extended an elegant arm to his brother as we drove away. I couldn't help feeling that the only superfluous object was myself, squatting uncomfortably on the little let-down seat, facing the two army men who sat to attention in the back seat, their bowlers pointing rigidly to the front. Between them, Mrs. Tremaine stared wonderingly at the back of Siegfried's head. We lunched on the course. Siegfried comfortably at home with the smoked salmon, the cold chicken, and the champagne. There was no doubt he had scored a tremendous success during the meal, discussing racing knowledgeably with the men and dispensing charm equally to their wives. The tough Mrs. Ransom positively simpered as he marked her card for her. It was quite certain that if the new appointment hung upon his behaviour today, a vote at this time would have seen him home and dry. After lunch, we went down to the paddock and had a look at the horses parading for the first race. I could see Siegfried expanding as he took in the scene. The jostling crowds, the shouting bookies, the beautiful animals pacing round, the jockeys, tiny, colourful, durable, chatting to the trainers out in the middle. He had got through enough champagne at lunch to sharpen his appreciation, and he was the very picture of a man who just knew he was going to have a successful day. Merriweather, the course vet, joined us to watch the first race. Siegfried knew him slightly, and they were chatting after the race when the vet wanted sign went up. A man hurried up to Merriweather. "That horse that slipped at the last bend is still down and doesn't look like getting up." The vet started for his car, which was parked in readiness near the rails. He turned towards us. "You two want to come?" Siegfried looked inquiringly at his party and received gracious nods of assent. We hurried after our colleague. Within seconds, we were racing down the course towards the last bend. Merriweather, hanging onto the wheel as we sped over the grass, grunted half to himself, "Hell, I hope this hasn't got a fracture. If there's one thing I mortally hate, it's shooting a horse." It didn't look good when we got to the spot. The sleek animal lay flat on its side, showing no movement apart from the laboured rise and fall of its ribs. The jockey, blood streaming from a cut brow, knelt by his head. "What do you think, sir? Has he a broken leg? Let's have a look." Merriweather began to palpate the extended limbs, running strong fingers over one bone, then another, carefully flexing the joints of fetlock, knee, shoulder, hock. "Nothing wrong there. Well, certainly no fracture." Then he pointed suddenly at the head. "Look at his eyes." We looked. They were glazed, and there was a slight but unmistakable nystagmus. "Concussion," Siegfried said. "That's it. He's just had a bang on the head." Merriweather got off his knees, looking happier. "Come on, we'll push him onto his chest. I think he ought to be able to get up with a bit of help." There were plenty of helpers from the crowd, and the horse was rolled easily till he rested on his sternum, four legs extended forward. After a couple of minutes in this position, he struggled to his feet and stood swaying slightly. A stable lad walked him away. Merriweather laughed. "Well, that wasn't so bad. Good horse, that. I think he'll be all right after a rest." Siegfried had started to reply when he heard, "Psst! Psst!" from beyond the rails. He looked up and saw a stout, red-faced figure gesturing at us eagerly. "Hey! Hey!" it was saying. "Come over here a minute!" We went over. There was something about the face which Siegfried seemed to find intriguing. He looked closer at the pudgy, grinning features, the locks of oily black hair falling over the brow, and he cried out in delight.
"God help us, Stewie Brannan! Herr James, come and meet another colleague. We came through college together."
Siegfried had told me a lot about Stewie Brannan. So much, in fact, that I seemed to be shaking hands with an old, well-remembered friend. Sometimes, when the mood was on us, Siegfried and I would sit up nearly till dawn over a bottle in the big room at Skeldale House, chewing over old times and recalling the colourful characters we'd known. I remembered He had told me he had overtaken Stewie about halfway through the course and had qualified while Stewie was still battling in his third year. Siegfried had described him as totally unambitious, averse to study, disinclined to wash or shave, in fact, his idea of the young man least likely to succeed. But there had been something touching about him. The ingenuousness of a child, a huge, all-embracing affection for his fellow humans, an impregnable cheerfulness. Siegfried called over to Merryweather.
"Will you give my apologies to my friends when you go back? There's a chap here I have to see. I'll only be a few minutes."
Merryweather waved, got into his car, and drove back up the course as we ducked under the rails. Siegfried seized the bulky figure by the arm.
"Come on, Stewie. Where can we get a drink?"